Okay, we're going to start actually at the end of Genesis 33 because that's where we left off. Got a couple verses left there. So just a very quick review. We got a lot to get into in chapter 34. I want to try and get through the whole chapter today. But just a quick review. So we saw that Jacob had met the angels of God and saw that there was a camp of angels there in the same place where he was camped. He called that place Mahanaim. That's in chapter 32. And he was about to go meet with his brother Esau. He was greatly distressed because he heard that Esau was coming with an army of 400 men. And he went to the Lord in prayer, and he actually spent some time wrestling with an angel of the Lord. And we saw from the scripture that really it was God himself that he was wrestling with. And it wasn't just a physical wrestling match. This is something very spiritual. Jacob was shedding tears. He was crying out in prayer. He was humbling himself before God and saying, God, I can't go without a blessing. I need a blessing from you, Lord, in order to face my brother. And he did, and he wrestled with God there that night all alone. And then at the end, he said, I've seen God face to face, and my life is preserved. And we saw some really good things in that. Then he went to go actually meet with his brother Esau. And how does he approach him? In humility. And he's bowing himself to the earth 7 times as he approaches. His whole family's bowing down. And he gets to Esau and he says, I've seen thy face as it were as though I had seen the face of God, and thou was pleased with me. And we saw some really great pictures of grace in that chapter. But then he parts ways with Esau. Actually, he told Esau that he was going to come to Seir, and he didn't. He went a different direction. So Esau went back to Seir. That was the land that he had conquered for himself there, that the Lord gave him. And Jacob, we left off verse 17, it says, Jacob journeyed to Succoth and built him an house and made booths for his cattle. Therefore, the name of the place is called Succoth. And so that Succoth is in the land of Canaan, which again is not the same as Seir. He went a different direction. He did not go with his brother Esau. So verse 18, it says, and Jacob came to Shalem, a city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, when he came from Padan Aram and pitched his tent before the city. And he bought a parcel of a field where he had spread his tent at the hand of the children of Hamor, Shechem's father, for 100 pieces of money. And he erected there an altar and called it El Elohi Israel. So let's stop there for a second. Just a couple of comments about these few verses. So it says in 18, Jacob came to Shalem, a city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan. Why is it called Shechem? So Shalem is one of the cities of Shechem. Shechem is that land. Why is it called Shechem? Well, it tells you that he bought this land at the hand of the children of Hamor, Shechem's father. We're going to find out that there's a prince of that country named Hamor, and he has a child, he has a son named Shechem. And that land is forever known as Shechem, after that man who lived there. You're going to find that throughout the rest of the Bible, it's always called Shechem. That name never changes. Sometimes you have a place like the city was called Luz at the first. But then Jacob gives it the name Bethel, the house of God. You see, a lot of times there's a place that has a name already, and then somebody gives it another name, and that's kind of the name that we stick with. But this place is always called Shechem. So Jacob buys this parcel of land, and he's a little bit outside of the city. You see, it says he spread his tent, he pitched his tent before the city. And he bought a parcel of a field where he had spread his tent for 100 pieces of money. And he erected there an altar and called it El Elohi Israel, which that name means God, the God of Israel. And it's an interesting name because when you look at it, you see El, Elohi, Israel. The name of God is in that name three different times. Because again, Israel means Prince of God or Prince with God. And the name is God, the God of the Prince with God. It's like a little God sandwich. Kind of reminds me of John 17 when Jesus says, I in them and thou in me. Like, are we in Christ or is he in us? Well, it's kind of both. He's all in all. He's the fullness, you know.
Right.
We're in him and he is also in us. Okay, chapter 34. Recall that Jacob has four wives at this point. He's got two main wives who are sisters, Rachel and Leah. And Leah had six sons and at least one daughter, and her name is Dinah. They were mentioned a couple chapters ago. Okay, chapter 34, verse 1. And Dinah, the daughter of Leah, which she bare unto Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, prince of the country, saw her, he took her and lay with her and defiled her. And his soul clave unto Dinah, the daughter of Jacob, and he loved the damsel and spake kindly unto the damsel. And Shechem spake unto his father Hamor, saying, get me this damsel to wife. And Jacob heard that he had defiled Dinah, his daughter. Now his sons were with his cattle in the field, and Jacob held his peace until they were come. And Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out unto Jacob to commune with him. And the sons of Jacob came out of the field when they heard it, and the men were grieved, and they were very wroth, because he had wrought folly in Israel in lying with Jacob's daughter, which thing ought not to be done. And Hamor communed with them, saying, the soul of my son Shechem longeth for your daughter. I pray you, give her him to wife, and make ye marriages with us, and give your daughters unto us, and take our daughters unto you. And ye shall dwell with us, and the land shall be before you. Dwell and trade ye therein, and get you possessions therein. And Shechem said unto her father and unto her brethren, let me find grace in your eyes, and what ye shall say unto me I will give. Ask me never so much dowry and gift, and I will give according as ye shall say unto me, but give me the damsel to wife. And the sons of Jacob answered Shechem and Hamor his father deceitfully, and said, because he had defiled Dinah their sister. And they said unto him, we cannot do this thing to give our sister to one that is uncircumcised, for that were a reproach unto us. But in this will we consent unto you, if ye will be as we be, that every male of you be circumcised, then will we give our daughters unto you, and we will take your daughters to us, and we will dwell with you, and we will become one people. But if ye will not hearken unto us to be circumcised, then will we take our daughter, and we will be gone. And their words pleased Hamor and Shechem, Hamor's son. And the young man deferred not to do the thing, because he had delight in Jacob's daughter, and he was more honorable than all the house of his father. And Hamor and Shechem, his son, came unto the gate of their city and communed with the men of their city, saying, these men are peaceable with us. Therefore, let them dwell in the land and trade therein. For the land, behold, it is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters to us for wives, and let us give them our daughters. Only herein will the men consent unto us for to dwell with us, to be one people. If every male among us be circumcised as they are circumcised, shall not their cattle and their substance and every beast of theirs be ours? Only let us consent unto them, and they will dwell with us. And unto Hamor and unto Shechem his son hearkened all that went out of the gate of his city, and every male was circumcised, all that went out of the gate of his city. And it came to pass on the third day, when they were sore, that two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brethren, took each man his sword and came upon the city boldly and slew all the males. And they slew Hamor and Shechem, his son, with the edge of the sword, and took Dinah out of Shechem's house and went out. The sons of Jacob came upon the slain and spoiled the city because they had defiled their sister. They took their sheep and their oxen and their asses and that which was in the city and that which was in the field and all their wealth and all their little ones and their wives took they captive and spoiled even all that was in the house. And Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, "Ye have troubled me to make me to stink among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites. And I being few in number, they shall gather themselves together against me and slay me, and I shall be destroyed, I and my house." And they said, Should he deal with our sister as with an harlot? Oh boy. Okay. So maybe you could see why I don't want to spend more than 1 week in this chapter. This is a very ugly chapter. Let me tell you, I used to read this chapter a lot differently when I was much younger. I got to the end of the chapter and they said, "Should he deal with our sister as with an harlot?" And I'm like, "Of course not. I mean, she's our sister. Come on. We got to do. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah. Give it to him." Let me tell you something. My attitude's changed, as you can probably tell as I was reading through this. This is a really sad chapter. All right. Let's go back to verse 1. And we'll start to talk about this. So the first thing you see in verse 1 is that Dinah was the daughter of Leah, which she bare unto Jacob, and she went out to see the daughters of the land. Okay. What do we know about the daughters of the land? Well, go back to chapter 24. Or I'm just going to read it quickly because we do have a lot to get through. But remember, Abraham, when he sent his servant to take a bride for his son Isaac, he said, "I'll make thee swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of the earth, that thou shalt not take a wife unto my son of the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I dwell. Go to my country. Get someone from over there. Don't take one of the daughters of the Canaanites." Why? There's something wrong with them. Okay? And then chapter 27. Again, Esau had taken a couple of wives from the daughters of the land of Canaan. And verse 46, Rebekah says to Isaac, "I'm weary of my life because of the daughters of Heth. If Jacob take a wife of the daughters of Heth, such as these which are of the daughters of the land, what good shall my life do me?" She was distressed over this. Bad enough that Esau already took some of them. So chapter 28, verse 1, and Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and charged him and said unto him, "Thou shalt not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan." Why? Well, later on in the book of Jeremiah, God would say, "Learn not the way of the heathen. Don't mingle with them. Don't marry the daughters of the land. They're going to turn you aside, just like Solomon's strange wives did with him." But we see here that Dinah went out to see the daughters of the land. Well, what does that mean? Well, she was living with a good family, good God-fearing father, you know, good upbringing and everything. And she goes out to see the daughters of the land. She's going to see what they're doing. Well, how do they do things? How do they dress? What are their customs? What are they doing? And that's kind of where this whole thing starts. Verse 2. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor the Hivite, prince of the country, saw her, he took her and lay with her and defiled her. Now, there's a lot of confusion about this. There's a lot of different opinions. And there are people who think, well, he forced her. He took her by force. He raped her. I do not think that is what happened here, and there are a lot of reasons why. First of all, in the scripture, when somebody is forced, it usually says forced, okay? It's going to say that, as a matter of fact, we'll look at one of the places. Let's go to 2 Samuel chapter 13. Another story that I don't want to get too deeply into, but here we are. So David had a son and a daughter by two different wives, and a lot of you probably know the story. But anyway, this son lusted after his half sister, and verse 11. It says that he took hold of her and said unto her, "Come lie with me, my sister." And she answered him, "Nay, my brother, do not force me, for no such thing ought to be done in Israel. Do not thou this folly." Sounds actually a lot like what just happened so far, right? "And I, whither shall I cause my shame to go?" This is a shameful thing. "And as for thee, thou shalt be as one of the fools in Israel. Now therefore, I pray thee, speak unto the king, for he will not withhold me from thee." I have my doubts about that part. If it was my son, my daughter, yeah, I'd have something to say about it. Verse 14, "Howbeit, he would not hearken unto her voice, but being stronger than she, forced her and lay with her." That's very obvious. He forced her. Okay? How does this end up? Verse 15, "Then Amnon hated her exceedingly, so that the hatred wherewith he hated her was greater than the love wherewith he had loved her. And Amnon said unto her, Arise, be gone. And she said unto him, There is no cause. This evil in sending me away is greater than the other that thou didst unto me. But he would not hearken unto her. Then he called his servant that ministered unto him and said, Put now this woman out from me, and bolt the door after her." Wow, that's pretty cold. You love her so much that you take her, you force her, you rape her, and then I get her away from me. I don't like her anymore. Well, that's pretty rough. That's, and there's, you know what? There's a lot of different types of love. There's a lot of different things that are called love. Okay? And you're going to see that in the Bible. There's a lot of different things called love. And this is one of them. It says that he loved his sister Tamar. That's not the right kind of love. But you see what happened in Genesis 34. This is way different. This is worlds different. Okay? So again, one reason why I say this, she was not forced here. It doesn't say she was forced. It very easily could have. It's many other places in the Bible where it mentions force. Okay. The second thing is his attitude toward her. Notice the language throughout this chapter. First of all, it says he was an honorable man. He was more honorable than all the house of his father. Now, that doesn't mean that he did the right thing here. What he did wasn't right. But he was an honorable man. It says that his soul clave unto Dinah. It wasn't just his body, it was his soul. It says that he loved her. Okay, that could be a little ambiguous. We just saw that. But it also says he had delight in her and he spake kindly to her. That is way different from how Amnon treated his sister. Okay? Pretty much after this happened, everything else you read about Shechem, it actually seems to describe him pretty favorably overall. Okay? The third thing, you see that he didn't just use her and throw her away, again, like Amnon. He actually wanted to marry her, even if it was going to cost him a great deal. I'll get further into that in a second. And then the fourth thing, at the end of the chapter, notice what her brothers said, what they accused him of. They said, should he deal with our sister as with an harlot? This actually is very telling. Go to Genesis 38. I know we didn't get here yet, but this is really going to help us out. It's also a very ironic chapter, and it really exposes the double standard that these boys had. Genesis chapter 38, you see that Judah, verse 2, he saw there a daughter of a certain Canaanite, one of the daughters of the land, whose name was Shua, and he took her and went in unto her. Same kind of language. He took her. He lay with her. Does that mean he forced her? No. No, they had three children together. This was an ongoing thing here. Okay? But anyway, that's not why I brought you here. Look at verse 15. Again, I'm not going to get into the whole story here, but it says, when Judah saw her, he thought her to be an harlot because she had covered her face. And he turned unto her by the way and said, go to, I pray thee, let me come in unto thee. For he knew not that she was his daughter-in-law. And she said, what wilt thou give me that thou mayest come in unto me? And he said, I will send thee a kid from the flock. And she said, wilt thou give me a pledge till thou send it? And they went back and forth. Okay? What am I saying? He's dealing with her as with an harlot. That's how you deal with a harlot. I'm not advocating for that, obviously. I'm saying that's how you deal with a harlot. You see, rape is a theft. It's taking something. Harlotry is selling and buying. It's consensual. There's an arrangement made. When they said, shall he deal with our sister as with an harlot? They're not saying he forced her. This wasn't forced. That's what I'm saying. And all these things kind of line up to agree with that. This wasn't a forced thing. So that seemed that, I mean, as far as I can tell, that's what happened. Verse 3, and his soul clave unto Dinah, the daughter of Jacob, and he loved the damsel and spake kindly unto the damsel. I have every indication that he actually cared for Dinah. Okay. And what he ends up doing here is seeking marriage. Next verse, he spake to his father Hamor, saying, get me this damsel to wife. And then they go into these negotiations. Go to Exodus chapter 22. Now, in the book of 1 John, he talks about there's a sin that's unto death, and then there's a sin that's not unto death, okay? I want you to understand what Shechem did here, it was wrong. It was totally wrong. And it's fornication. Okay? But it's not the end of the world. This is a wrong that's not as extreme as some of the other wrongs, okay? Exodus chapter 22, when God gives the law to Israel, which they didn't have yet at this point, when he gives it to Israel, this is what it says. Exodus 22 verse 16, and if a man entice a maid that is not betrothed, that she's not engaged to be married, and lie with her, he shall surely endow her to be his wife. If her father utterly refuse to give her unto him, he shall pay money according to the dowry of virgins. That was God's judgment. If this thing happens, these two unmarried people do it, then get married. It's a wrong. It's not the right thing to do. It's out of order, but it's fixable. You can right this wrong by doing the right thing, and you can smooth this thing over. It's not the end of the world. It's not like verse 19, whosoever lieth with a beast shall surely be put to death. It's not like all the things listed in Leviticus 18. He talks about adultery. He talks about abortion. He talks about incest, you know, your different relatives. He talks about bestiality, homosexuality. He talks about all these things. And then says, because of all these things, the land vomiteth out the inhabitants thereof. And there comes a line, you know, there comes a point when a nation like Sodom crosses a line and does something that's just so absolutely wicked that God's just like, I need to destroy them. They can get to that point. But this, two people outside of marriage doing this, fornication, they had sex one time. It's wrong, but it's not the sin worthy of death. There's a way to fix it. There's a way to right the situation. And actually, that's what Shechem wanted to do. That was his heart. Again, I'm not defending Shechem's action here, but this is the reality. Everybody in the world at this point is basically a Gentile. Now, God is in the process of calling people out from the Gentiles, and he's going to create this nation called Israel. And these people were going to have his laws, and they were going to be holy people to him. But fornication is common among the Gentiles. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's normal. But it's common. Okay? This was a Gentile doing Gentile things. You think back to Abimelech. You know, like when he's rebuking Abraham, he's... Maybe it was Abraham, maybe it was Isaac. I can't remember because he rebuked them both. But he said, one of the people might lightly have lion with her. We didn't know she was your wife. Lightly have lion with her? Yeah, I mean, that's honestly, that's a lot of times the way Gentiles do things. They do things out of order. And it doesn't necessarily mean that their intentions were dishonorable or they were insincere. We have to understand that. It's still out of order. It's still not right, but it's not worthy of death. You know, especially when they're people that actually care about each other and want to get married. So that's kind of what I'm seeing here. But the sons of Jacob, one other thing I want to say, verse 5, it says, Jacob heard that he had defiled Dinah, his daughter. And Jacob held his peace until they were come. It seems like Jacob doesn't take a lot of action here. He's just kind of waiting. I think he wanted to meet with his sons, talk this over. Jacob's the kind of man, you saw what he just did a couple chapters ago. He probably would have inquired of the Lord, said, God, what should I do? I don't want to have these entanglements with the daughters of the land or, you know, I mean, the people of the land here. I understand, you know, I'm supposed to be holy and set apart for the Lord. And this is not a good idea, but given the situation, Lord, what should I do? He probably would have done that. But what happened is his sons went and answered for him, verse 13, and they answered deceitfully. We find out later on, Jacob is actually going to, specifically, this was Simeon and Levi that ended up killing all the males of the city. Let's go over to Genesis 49 for a second. It's going to have really far-reaching consequences that I won't get into yet, but just want to peek at Genesis 49 for a second. This is a time when Jacob is supposed to be blessing all his sons as he's getting ready to die. And instead of a blessing, he ends up giving out a curse to these two sons.
Right. Yep.
Now, he doesn't curse them directly. He doesn't say, cursed be Simeon and Levi, but he does curse their anger. But listen to what he says here. Verse 5, Simeon and Levi are brethren. Instruments of cruelty are in their habitations. O my soul, come not thou into their secret, unto their assembly, mine honor, be not thou united. these boys did something in secret. They took counsel together and planned this thing out. They didn't tell their father. And they certainly did not inquire of the Lord. For in their anger, they slew a man, and in their self-will, they dig down a wall. Cursed be their anger, for it was fierce, and their wrath, for it was cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. And that's a prophecy of how those two tribes would turn out in the land. But anyway, so they answered them deceitfully, and this is their proposal, verse 14. And they said, "We cannot do this thing to give our sister to one that is uncircumcised, for that were a reproach unto us. But in this will we consent unto you, if ye will be as we be, that every male of you be circumcised, then we will give our daughters unto you, and we will take your daughters to us, and we will dwell with you, and we will become one people." Okay? Now, honestly, I don't know what God would have counseled them in this situation. I don't know, because they didn't ask him. God did make provision for if strangers wanted to be integrated into the nation of Israel. There was a way to do that. They would have to be circumcised. And there was one manner of law that was given for Israel and for the strangers that were among them. And there was an integration process. Hey, you want to follow the God of Israel? Come join us, you know. But you got to be bound by our law. You got to do things the way God told us to do them. Okay? That's kind of legit. The problem is they answered him deceitfully. This was never their real intention. The other possibility is, verse 17, if you will not hearken unto us to be circumcised, then will we take our daughter and we will be gone. Now, again, we just read in Exodus a little while ago that there was another option. The father had the choice. He could let them be married, and that's fine. Or he could utterly refuse to give her unto him. And then he would pay money according to the dowry of virgins, and you know that's it. So I mean, Jacob could have refused here, or he could have let them marry according to the law. That those were the options. And they said, "Well, if you're circumcised, we'll do option A. If you're not, then we'll take her, and you know that'll be the end of it." Okay. Well, verse 18. And their words pleased Hamor and Shechem, Hamor's son. So what's his response? The young man deferred not to do the thing because he had delight in Jacob's daughter, and he was more honorable than all the house of his father. He went and did this thing right away. And this is not a light thing. Okay? Now God gave this token of circumcision to Abraham. You know why Abraham did it? It wasn't because it was a fun thing to do. It's not because he was going to enjoy it. It was because Abraham was willing to suffer because God told him, and he had faith in God. Amen. This man, he had something in his heart. He really loved the girl, and he was willing to go to great lengths to have her for his wife. And it was not a fun thing. Everybody else did it, following his example. And they were sore, and they were laying around in their house like, "Man, I'm in all this pain. Yeah, I don't feel like doing anything." And then these two people, armed, taking their swords, and they're able to slay a whole city of these disabled males because they're in all this pain. But the young man deferred not to do the thing. And this is what it says about him. He was more honorable than all the house of his father. Yeah, he was a Gentile. Yeah, he messed up. He did something he shouldn't have done. But I tell you, what they did to him was a lot worse than what they did to that city. Verse 20, and Hamor and Shechem, his son, came unto the gate of their city and communed with the men of their city, saying, these men are peaceable with us. Therefore, let them dwell in the land and trade therein. For the land, behold, is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters to us for wives. Let us give them our daughters. I mean, from their point of view, there's nothing wrong with this. This is a good situation. I mean, these guys, they seem like really nice people. They're peaceable. They fear God. Like, who would you rather have for your neighbors, right? Not only that, they're also wealthy. Let them dwell with us. Let them trade. Verse 23, shall not their cattle and their substance and every beast of theirs be ours? I just want to make it clear from the rest of this passage, they're not saying that we're going to steal everything that they have. They're saying that if these people dwell with us, they're wealthy, and by combining with them, we're going to be wealthy too. We're going to share in their wealth. That's all they're saying here. Verse 22, only herein will the men consent unto us for to dwell with us to be one people, if every male among us be circumcised as they are circumcised. Okay, well, there's a trade-off, but is it worth it? Well, verse 24, they hearken to him. Unto Hamor and unto Shechem, his son, hearkened all that went out of the gate of his city, and every male was circumcised, all that went out of the gate of his city. And, I already read the rest of this about what they did. They came upon the city, and they slew all the males. And I just read Genesis 49, 6, it mentions their self-will. By their self-will, they dig down a wall. Here's the thing about what they did. Again, they did not inquire of the Lord to do his judgment or to do his determination or to take counsel from him. What they did is self-will. They determined what the punishment would be. Let me give you another example of this. Go to 2 Samuel chapter 12. David's going to do pretty much the same thing here, just in a different context. So many of you are, I'm sure, familiar with the story of David and Bathsheba. And he coveted another man's wife. He committed adultery with her. And then to cover it up, he had the man murdered. Okay? That's pretty bad. 2 Samuel chapter 12. And let me start in verse 4. So this is Nathan giving this little parable here. And he says, there came a traveler unto the rich man. He spared to take of his own flock and of his own herd to dress for the wayfaring man that was come unto him, but took the poor man's lamb and dressed it for the man that was come to him. So Nathan is giving a parable, but he doesn't tell David that it's a parable. David thinks he's talking about somebody real, okay? And actually he is. So Nathan tells him, this man stole this guy's lamb and killed it, and David's anger was greatly kindled against the man. Verse 5, and he said to Nathan, as the Lord liveth, the man that hath done this thing shall surely die, and he shall restore the lamb fourfold because he did this thing and because he had no pity. Okay, well that's a pretty good judgment, right? Go back to Exodus 22. Which we were just in a little while ago. Verse 1. This is what it says in the law, that David, as king, was supposed to read every day. Exodus 22:1. If a man shall steal an ox or a sheep and kill it or sell it, he shall restore 5 oxen for an ox and 4 sheep for a sheep. And that's it. What did David say? Well, he's going to restore fourfold. Well, that part's right. That man shall surely die. Wait a minute. He stole a sheep and killed it. That man was not supposed to die for that crime. That was David's self-will in making up his own judgment in order to basically say, well, I know what I did. I know what I just did, all these sins. But you know what I'm going to do to make myself seem a little more righteous? I'm going to up the punishment a little bit on this guy who I don't even know. I'm going to up the punishment on. I'm going to prescribe something a little bit worse than what God prescribed. That was self-will. And that man that he was condemning there turned out to be himself. Double standard. Again, I say, the sons of Jacob had issues with double standards, and we're going to see more of that later on, too. We're pretty much close to being out of time here, so just a couple of quick points here. Verses 27 and 28, it says, the sons of Jacob, and this is all of them now, apparently, or at least more than just the two. It says, they came upon the slain and spoiled the city because they had defiled their sister. They spoiled the city because he had defiled their sister. They took their sheep and their oxen and their asses and that which was in the city and all that was in the field and all their wealth and all their little ones and their wives took they captive and spoiled even all that was in the house. They spoiled the whole city. They took everything. They looted it. Well, what does that do to restore the honor of their sister? Sounds like an excuse to me. Honestly, it reminds me of what happened a few years back. I think it was the George Floyd protest or something. You got all these people looting supermarkets, stealing stuff. Well, it's because of this injustice. So you're using this injustice as an excuse to fill your pockets with stuff that doesn't belong to you? You know, that's disgusting. That's really disgusting. So end of the chapter here, verse 30. And Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, ye have troubled me to make me to stink among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites. Now that's true. I mean, Jacob was coming in here. He should have had a good reputation. This is a man who feared God and tried to do what was right. And suddenly, people are looking at him like, I mean, remember Genesis 4. Cain murdered his brother Abel. He says, everybody that finds me is going to slay me. People don't like murderers. They don't want their neighbors to be murderers. God gave the punishment, Genesis 9. He that sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed. That's what's supposed to happen. So Jacob's like, hey, these people are going to hate me. They're going to want to kill me. And I, being few in number, they shall gather themselves together against me and slay me, and I shall be destroyed, I and my house. Now here's the thing. God's protection was on Jacob. Okay? And we're going to see that in the next chapter, that God is not going to allow what his sons did to cancel out the blessing that he put on Jacob. And his protection is going to be there. But that is chapter 34. It's an ugly chapter, but I hope there's some good perspective that you could take out of this chapter. And really walk circumspectly. Have the right attitude toward them that are without, so to speak. But thanks for being in Sunday school. Amen.